Welcome to the What's Up ABQ podcast. Today, our hosts sit down with a local book author and delve into the process of writing a novel. From his initial idea to the final product, his journey is filled with twists and turns, moments of self-doubt, and bursts of creativity. Our guest talks about his writing routine and how his own experience gives depth to the characters in his story. It's the passion, determination, and dedication required to bring a novel to fruition. And it's What's Up ABQ.
Hey Albuquerque, this is Lindsay.
This is Lorenzo.
And this is What's Up ABQ.
What's up Albuquerque, this is Lorenzo.
And this is Lindsay, and today we have...
Will Clattenburg.
So Will, tell us kind of what you do and why you're here.
Yeah, well, among other things, I am trying to be a writer, or, you know, I attempt to do some writing like on the side. And to date, I've published two books and a few short stories, you know, maybe like 10 or something in small journals and magazines. And my, you know, my main job is teaching. I'm a teacher. So that's what I do for money, I guess.
To make money to pay the bills.
Nice. So we have two. So one of them you gave to us, The Art of Fugue.
Yeah. That's
right. And then is this your most recent one?
Yeah. Last time around. Last year. Came out last year.
Nice.
Around April, around that time.
So tell us a little bit about your most recent book, The Last Time Around, because I was kind of perusing online before. So tell us a little bit about kind of where this story came from and what made you decide, yes, this is my book and this is what I'm going to go with.
Sure. I actually grew out of, I went to New Mexico State for MFA program. And, you know, part of MFAs is you write a thesis. It's a 3-year program. So the last year there, you know, this was sort of my thesis idea. I've been sort of tossing around different ideas, and this one gained some traction, and I felt like I was able to start working on it like the end of the second year there. So basically, you know, I went through the you know, whole thesis class and everything, and was able to produce a manuscript. And since that, and I graduated in 2015 from there. But since then, you know, I've tinkered around with it a little bit and, you know, started submitting it various places, contests, publishers, you know, that kind of thing.
Nice.
It was finally, picked up in 2021, maybe. I'm losing the track of the time frame exactly, but it was a long time. And there was a long time where I didn't really work on, you know, editing it too much more at that point. But just kind of sent it out, and, an Australian publisher called In Case of Emergency Press indicated they were interested, and, you know, the process took a little time, but they finally said, oh yeah, well, we'd be interested in publishing it. And, you know, I had a contract and everything. I was paid with two books from them, free. So, you know, but the main thing for me was really just getting it out there and having it somewhere accessible. It's on Amazon and stuff, as well as their website, In Case of Emergency Press. And they spent a little time. There was some editing back and forth, which I appreciated as well, because I think, you know, that's important. I don't want to just send something out without anyone really looking at it too much, or more professional sort of gaze and stuff like that. So all in all, you know, I think it was pretty normal for how book publishing goes in terms of the time frame. But I was happy with the work that we did together. And yeah, and it came out in last April or so.
So what is the story about for those that are maybe interested in reading it or picking it up without giving away too much? I don't want you to spoil anything, but tell us a little bit about the premise of the storyline and kind of what inspired you to write the story itself.
Yeah, well, it takes place in New York City, and the main character is kind of going through a time of change, just kind of like a growth period, I guess. And so he's, you know, just broke up with his girlfriend, and he's leaving his job, sort of an office job, to become, or he's thinking of becoming a teacher. And so the whole book is sort of his last night out with a few coworkers, about 3 coworkers. And they're just kind of, you know, talking, having conversation, going from place to place. The book is kind of structured in three different individual books or chapters, I guess you could call them, within it. And so each chapter or each book takes place in a different location, as the sort of the night proceeds. So it's all less than 24-hour period, all basically, you know, just following them around as they talk and hang out. And I guess the interesting or the different thing about the book is it's told largely through footnotes. Hmm. So the text proper, like sort of the the bigger text up front is like just sort of what's happening play by play, like, you know, their conversation types of things, but references, stories, sort of anecdotes, side stories, you know, just fill in information about this, that, or the other thing, all that sort of housed in these footnotes that kind of balloon outward to a degree. So it's kind of a makes for a different sort of reading experience, I think, because you're sort of keeping track of two different things. But I tried to make it as readable as possible and, you know, hopefully accessible and everything. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the structure and the format and sort of what's going on with it.
That's really interesting. I tend to actually really like footnotes because I feel like you get little tidbits about either the character or the plot or like maybe something that's mentioned that you're like, well, I don't really know much about that. I need like just a little bit more information. So you kind of get this little side, I don't want to say side conversation, but this little side index of things to sort of reference as you're going through. It does seem like it would be like more of an interactive type read. And that's really interesting. That's how my brain works anyway. So it's like,
right,
you yeah. know, when I'm telling a story, I'm thinking of a million footnotes on the side. So
that's sort of, I think that was sort of my approach. I think in initial drafts, when I was getting feedback from people in the program at NMSU, that was things that people appreciated sort of saying, oh, this is sort of how, you know, the brain works. You know, you think of one thing and you associate it with something else. And I think sort of it just sort of grew from there. And I didn't, originally it was sort of like based, you know, maybe about 10-page short story. And I felt like, well, maybe I could just keep going and see sort of where it goes. Sort of just like stream of consciousness or like, you know, the work sort of just built out by itself. But, you know, after you have everything down, then you can of course go back and see like, where are the connections and what things need to be, you know, just cut out and doesn't make sense or, things should be emphasized. But the footnote approach, I think for this, worked for me, it was a helpful way of actually just composing the work and getting it down. So hopefully it's also, you know, a nice way to read it too.
That's really cool. So when you're in the program, you mentioned you developed the manuscript.
Yeah.
So is that like the beginning? So I'm totally just like, I've never written any books, but so, I mean, is that how it works? Like you have the manuscript. Is that just like a skeleton of the idea? And do you have your whole story like in your mind how it goes? And then you build from there? How does that work?
Yeah, well, I guess a couple of things. So, I mean, in terms of like manuscript itself, you know, so the point of the last year in the MFA program, or I think maybe it's the last semester or last, however it works, I guess some are different than others, but you're creating sort of your thesis, right? So like in PhD programs, people write a thesis on like, I don't know, like whatever, like Henry James or something. But for MFA, you know, your thesis is your creative work. So in fiction, at least, what a lot of people choose to do is either sort of bring together a collection of short stories that they've worked on throughout the program that kind of have some thematic links, or like a novel, something along those lines, or maybe like a hybrid work. So you kind of work on it together and workshop it and try to get it into, you know, fairly good shape. And it's actually published and housed somewhere in the university, like in the stacks, you know, you can go and look and it's like the original thesis that was sent in because there's a thesis committee. I mean, you do the same stuff that you do sort of for a PhD. You sit and talk with people and all that kind of thing. But, you know, a lot of times those still aren't quite finished works in a way. You mean, you know, you've gone through the program, people have, you know, your professors have read it and everything, but it hasn't been sort of professionally edited and you haven't really worked with like, you know, book publisher or something like that. In some cases, some people are able to publish their theses or whatever, like pretty fast, I guess, depending on connections and things like that. But once you've worked it up to a certain degree, I think, you know, it's sort of yours to take it to where you want. I know a lot of my friends who have they've written their thesis are still kind of maybe working on it, or, you know, some have maybe given up on it at this point. It's almost been 10 years, but some are still, you know, sending stuff out. It's a long haul process because, you know, a lot of famous writers nowadays have sent places to like 70 publishing places, or at least their first novels before they're well known, or short story collections are even harder in some ways. So, you know, it just takes a lot of time and sort of, you know, eventually it's like, how much do you want to dedicate to that? Like, you know, you also have to have a job, but most people at least, and, you know, take care of your family or whatever else you're doing. Things get busy and, you know, things come up. And so I understand why eventually, you know, some people put it to the side or something, but.
How much of yourself do you feel like you put into your characters?
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting question. I think sort of, obviously all my characters are sort of filtered through like the lens of like myself. So I think in this particular novel, last time around, the main character and me have like a lot of commonalities. I mean, I feel like, you know, it's based loosely autobiographical sort of information just because, you know, I'm not too keen on doing research. That's not something I like to do that much as a writer, although, you know, I've become a little bit better at it than I used to be. But I feel like if I know the stuff, I can write about it. And so if I've experienced it, if I've lived through it, like it's easier for me to sort of guide the reader through that sort of whole world. And so there's a couple jobs I had in New York where I, you know, I knew the office buildings, I knew the layout, I knew my coworkers really well. And so that gave me a sort of a lot of background information that was good because I wouldn't, you know, have to, what did this place look like or how did I describe these people? So, you know, the more, sometimes I write stuff a little bit more inventive and sort of create all those things. I think the older you get, the more, you know, you've met different people, you kind of know, you know, you can kind of mix and match people, but they sort of become characters in a way, or they filtered down and, you know, you change them up a little bit. But in my past writing in these books, I think a lot of it is sort of based on autobiography, my own sort of life and stuff. Even characters who aren't me, like a, you know, female character, I still sort of maybe situate them in a place that I know pretty well so that I can kind of have that going for me. So yeah. I don't have to do all that work, you know.
So it's interesting because I know you aside from being an author, like as a friend and we used to be neighbors. So it's interesting because in the things that I've read, I see a little bit of like your East Coast influence coming out in different and various ways, which is kind of cool. You know, just knowing you personally, it's kind of fun to see like the things that come through on the page. What is your process like, or do you have one when you're like, okay, I think I have this idea. Maybe I want to take it into a short story or maybe I want to take it further than that. What does your process kind of look like?
I think for me, I really have to force myself to get into it. A lot of those short stories that went into that earlier book that was published, were written just in the course of probably just 1 month in the summer in 2018, something like that. When the kids finally went to camp or something or other, it was in their daycare, I think. And, you know, we had those days to kind of just to ourselves and, you know, that time too, and sort of that mental energy. And so I would sort of shut myself or in a room and kind of write for like a couple hours every day. Cause a lot of times I don't think I have like an idea right away until I just sit down and start doing something. And then once I sort of open up the process, maybe a weekend after I've been writing for about a week, 10 days, something like that. Then when I'm walking or taking a run, then things sort of pop into my mind and I start being like, oh, okay, I really want to write that down. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, there's whole months that go by where I'm consumed in something or other, I'm busy or whatever. And I just don't, I feel like I don't know. I don't have any ideas. I'll never write anything ever again. you know, like now, for instance, like right now I'm taking a lot of time to sort of build up the classes I'm teaching and make sure I have interesting and fun activities and stuff. And that takes time. And I mean, there's just so much time that you can do things. Once you fall into a routine and things settle, then it's easier to kind of have that time.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it really, for me at least, I just have to just start doing it and then see where it goes. And usually the first 20 pages or something are not really usable anyway. So it's just a question of sitting down and getting that work out and then saying, okay, well now where I can go from there, what else might come to me eventually.
Sounds good. So,
we're going to take a quick break and we will be right back.
Right back.
Merch, short for merchandise. You see it, you need it, you want to show it off, especially if it's showing off your New Mexico pride, right? Well, the What's Up ABQ store has it, and it's ready to put on any space, any face, or any served face. Just slip over to whatsupabq.com and click the merch tab above the podcast player. There you'll discover all the accessories, stickers, clothing, and drinkware with a New Mexico flair that you can ever want. Come on, you don't need that new toothbrush anyway, do you? Pick up some merch now at whatsupabq.com.
Okay, we're back.
We are back. And so in case you're just joining us, which I don't know why you would only join us halfway through a podcast, but you never know.
Randomly 16 minutes and 30 seconds or whatever this
is. If you're that person, we are interviewing Will Clattenburg, who is a local author here in Albuquerque. And we were kind of talking about writing processes and sort of what goes into that whole process. So how did you decide you wanted to be a writer?
I don't know.
Or did you?
I don't know totally if it was a very, you know, conscious decision, but like a long time in school, I was writing and, you know, even in high school, I wrote for the literary magazine and I was probably an editor on the high school newspaper and things like that. But
allegedly.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, you know, but even before that time, you know, I had little notebooks and things and I would write stuff down and probably at least since second grade or so. So since that time, I've always, you know, really felt like I wanted to be a writer. I tried to read as much as I could and kind of thought there was like a romantic aspect to the whole career and everything. But yeah, I mean, and then once I was in college and sort of beyond, I tried to think of ways that I could take on that career and how what I would need to do to sort of support myself to be able to write and mm-hmm. find ways to balance things out.
Yeah. For me, there's something, I mean, I'm not an author, I guess, but like for me, there's something very therapeutic of whatever connection is going on in your brain between getting that thought physically down onto either paper or typing it onto a computer. For me, it's particularly typing. I don't know. It's just very therapeutic. I do journals and I've done blogs and stuff like that, but it's like, it just feels there's some sort of sense of like satisfaction of like getting that out of your brain and like it's been released, it's freed or something. I don't know, but I feel pretty good about that.
Comes to life once it's out of your head.
Yeah,
intangible.
It's a unique process. I mean, I think like, again, like when I go into something and I'm not exactly sure where it's going to go, I sort of, that process of discovery is very, like you said, it's unique. It's interesting. Sometimes it can be sort of therapeutic or there's things I want to say, but I'm not sure how else to express them, I guess. And they're in there somewhere. And, you know, once you have something going, then my brain sort of does the same thing where I'm like making lists or, you know, thinking about, oh, what has to happen next or what should I do or, you know, different avenues. But, you know, that initial sort of push to try to get something written like that, I think that's like sort of in some ways it's the most challenging, but also the most fun as a writer.
So do you have any authors that particularly inspire you, or do you have a couple of favorite authors that you kind of look to as guides or just something where you're like, yeah, I really like this person's style of writing or the tone or what have you?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I feel like that's something, you know, as a writer, I should probably like prepare more rehearsed answers for. I mean, I think the short answer is really no, not as much as I used to. I think when I was younger, I've had my heroes, people I thought were really good and stuff. Have you ever read books by Anne McCaffrey, like the science fiction writer? Mm-mm. I think as a younger writer, when I was probably even in middle school or around that time, like she really, I felt like this was great. Like all these worlds she built up and I just wanted to sort of be doing that same thing. Now I'm sort of really more eclectic in terms of my tastes. And, you know, if you'd asked me like the last 5 books I read, I'd have to go to like my Goodreads app or something and probably just like pull them up because like, I read a lot of stuff. I absorb it. I feel like I absorb it at least. It's hard to tell because sometimes I'm sleep deprived from the toddler waking up like several times in the middle of the night. But I read this stuff and I feel like, oh, this is good. But then like, you know, a week or two later, I'm like, oh, who was that person again? So I feel like I have a lot of influences. And I think more now I'm trying to read things that I might not necessarily have picked up before or that are maybe sort of against sort of my more traditional sort of taste sometimes. You know, I try to read stuff from people from different countries, a lot of in translation, a lot more nonfiction. I feel like when I was in college, I was like, I don't need nonfiction. I don't want to read that. But now I feel like I want to know more about the world and different things and different topics. I have a book that's, I think it's just about animals that I'm excited about reading at some point soon by a science writer named Ed Yong. And he's a real good writer. But I really like any of those things, any and all. And even more technical, like scientific texts. Sometimes I'm reading a couple of those for my classes I'm teaching just to kind of sort of understand them better when I present them in lessons and stuff. And I think you can just learn a lot from any really type of writing, you know, as long as you're open to it. Even bad writing, I guess, in a way, like writing that you feel like, oh, well, I could do better than this or something or other, but in some way or whatever. I think you actually just, you see what they're doing and you can pick up the good things and sort of see the structure that works and all the techniques and various things. So, you know, for me, I'm really pretty open to most and every and all, and I wouldn't really, can't say I'm not going to read anything, but, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's some things I would just not read, but prefer not to. Even now. And I think that's also a thing. Like once I'm older now, if there's a book I just don't like, I'm not going to, you know, after a few pages, like I'm done. Like I don't have the time anymore to kind of push through that anymore. Mm-hmm. I think I feel like for a while I saw that college mindset, like I'm going to do it. Like it's like, there's something like, yo, I need to finish it because I put this commitment into it or I bought it or something. Now I'm just kind of like, no, that's not going to happen. Like I don't like it. I thought it was going to be good or it was recommended to me or, you know, I recommended by something else I was reading. And it just, you know, it doesn't pan out, and, you know, I'm fine with it. Yeah.
So what do you think the the writer or the author, I want to say writing community, but maybe that's what I mean, an author landscape is like in New Mexico. How have you kind of perceived that as a writer?
Yeah, it's pretty good, actually. And I mean, I wish I had more time to sort of be part of that sort of landscape, because I think it's beginning to take off again. Mm-hmm. So when I first moved here about 8 years ago, there was a couple writing groups, and I tried to, I learned of them through like meetup.com or something, but they don't just go through that app or that website. They have other, but one of them meets pretty close to here at Domingo Baca. I think they still meet there. And it's just, you know, it went through the whole pandemic and everything, and you know, they're still going. And so I had some writer friends in there, and I was trying to do it the first couple years, just like every other week or something. I went to a few sort of like mini sort of informal workshops, things like that. Hmm. But also back then there was like something like Albuquerque Writers Workshop or something. Mm-hmm. There was a little bit more, you know, you had to put more time investment into it.
Formality.
Yeah. It was a little more and like, you know, the instructions were kind of like, well, this is for like serious people, serious writers and stuff. And I was like, oh gosh, I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm.
How do I know if I'm serious?
I don't know.
It's pretty intimidating.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like, you know, well, I think it's in a way like, you know, those classes where it's like, you know, this is going to be a lot of work or whatever. Like, you know, sometimes people just try to weed out certain individuals, especially if they're doing it through like, you know, the web or whatever. You don't want like anyone to just show up, because, you know, there's some people who come to some of these meetings. You're like, oh my gosh. But yeah, so I was like, oh, I really want to join that one, because I think it would be good. And they capped it at like 12, which was good. That particular group, because the other one doesn't really have like a limit. And then like, if like 20, I don't know, if 20 people sign up, like they try to go through every single person's story in like one time. And that's just like too much, because you like, I, you know, you can try, that's, you have to read all this stuff, and then you have to try to think of some ways that you can, you know, some comments that might be helpful. Anyway, long story short, like that Albuquerque one, that one isn't there anymore. I tried to look back for it like a few years ago, and it's like, it was gone. It's like, oh no, it's too bad. But there's a new, group, I think, that's also through meetup.com. I think it has a similar name, if I'm not mistaken. It's like Albuquerque. It might even be Albuquerque Writers Workshop. Maybe that's that name and the other one is something else. But that one, maybe the cap is about like 18 or so. But I think what they do that's better is they maybe limit the amount of stories that they talk about in one time. So even though they meet for like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, something like that, they'll only discuss like 3 or 4 stories. And that's, you know, you get a lot more attention for those things. Mm-hmm. And it's easier for the participants too, because, you know, you're not trying to read like so much stuff and like have all these different plot lines and things. Mm-hmm. So that's a good writing community that I think is started pretty recently. The Cyber Scribes one, that's the one at Domingo Baca. That's, you know, that's a nice group. I know the guy who runs it. But a lot of the people who I used to work with there, I think they've like gone on to other things. But yeah, I mean, so there is a community, and there's a lot of now since like the pandemic and all that mm-hmm. stuff, there's a lot of, you know, just online ones and right. online groups, ones where, you know, it's just like, maybe just about like, here, like, this is going to be an hour where you're going to write. And it's like, we're all doing it together or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And you might choose to share what you've written or not, but those are all real good too. I mean, it's all, again, it comes down to motivation, and if you can do it and, you know, time works out for you, mm-hmm. if it's not during like your toddler's like lunch or whatever, or, you know, he's screaming or something. But yeah, I mean, that's, again, it's like, push yourself to do it, find some way that works for you. And if that's a good, you know, if that's a good impetus then to start writing, then I think that's, I'm all for that.
So nice. So within these communities too, do you all offer each other support for like the technical piece, like how to get published, or if you need art, or if, you know, editing, or I'm sure there's a lot that goes into writing a book. Like, do you find support in each other and find best practices amongst your guys?
Yeah, I think, and it depends how much experience the other writers in these groups have. Because a lot of these, like the ones from meetup.com, like the Albuquerque Writers and the Cyber Scribes, a lot of those, the people who are in those are unpublished writers. Mm-hmm. But they're working, and they're working on something, and they're hoping to get it published. So they might not have all the expertise in some of those areas. Although there was like this old guy who was teaching, like the other one I mentioned, who seemed like he like published some stuff. So he was, I published this thing and this thing. So, you know, it depends. And there's people who have some experience, or maybe they've worked in some aspects of publishing in some way, shape, or form, so they know some of those things. But that's an area that actually kind of gets neglected a little bit, not only just in writing community, but groups, like small groups like that. They're more for just the community and like the friendship, I think. But you know, even like the schools a little bit, I don't think they do a very good job. Like, those programs that are supposed to be teaching you writing, they don't necessarily teach you the ins and outs of actual publishing, because it's more about like the fun of like the process and how you can make it good. But like, at that point, they don't really take it too much further. So, you know, I also forgot to mention there's a Taos like writers conference that's really good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it hasn't been around that long. I think this might be the sixth maybe or seventh year.
How interesting. Like we were just talking to somebody for the game conference and they said they had a conference in Taos. That's interesting that there's conferences in Taos.
I think it's in July most times. And I think last summer it was in early July, but it's sometime in July. And they have like a keynote speaker. It's about 3 days. I think like two full days, like they have workshops and different things. And then, you know, half day, something like that. I haven't been able to go up there again, you know, due to like family stuff and everything, but I'm hoping to, because it seems like it's a real cool place. And I like Taos in general, but it seemed, you know, it's like any sort of writer's conference, you can sign up for the things you're interested in. And they do bring in some pretty nationally known writers who've published books at like, you know, big presses and stuff.
Yeah.
So it sounds kind of fun. And I'm trying to remember, I think there's like some smaller events and stuff around town, but that's like the big one, at least.
I feel like New Mexico in particular has a place that encourages a lot of creativity. Like it just seems like a very good place to write. Like if you want to find a quiet spot in some coffee shop in Santa Fe or Taos or Albuquerque or whatever.
So it's interesting that you say that. So little footnote here. So I was at a thrift store the other day and they had antique books, and I like to peruse antique books because I've always liked that. Ever since I was a kid, I've collected like antique books. I have like a really old copy of The Brothers Grimm and then The Jungle Book. And so I found this book.
That's mine.
That's yours now. Gosh. So they had this book. I should go get it because it's inside. But it's a poetry book. It was written in 1920 and it's called The End of the Trail. And it's about Santa Fe. And the author wrote a bunch of poems about the end of the Santa Fe Trail. So all the poems are about different places in Santa Fe and things. And it's interesting because yesterday we were in Santa Fe for fiestas. And when we got back, I started kind of perusing through the book and like looking. And the feelings and the images and the words that he uses to paint this picture of Santa Fe are still really accurate today. Like, it was really interesting to read how, you know, back in 1920, this person's perception of a place is pretty accurate, even like right now. I just thought that was really cool. And it's really cool that it's like New Mexico specific, and I can kind of compare my own perspective on that city and then someone else, you know, over 100 years ago who was in the same place at the same time, place at a different time, and see like, okay, what are we, you know?
Do you know what I think is really cool about that too is this person who wrote these words had no idea that like Lindsay from 2023 is going to be reading those words. So that's a really cool thing about writing, is like your writings a lot of times are going to like outlive you. And I don't know, maybe even in a thousand years from now, maybe, you know, they're going to stumble upon Will's books and read his stories and be like, oh, that's what it was like in the 21st century.
No, it was just really cool. It was like a literary time capsule. I mean, I'm just looking at it. I mean, there's a poem called Burrow Alley and I'm like, oh, this should be interesting. You know, and I'm just going through and reading. And so I think, like you were saying, the landscape of New Mexico has always been kind of ripe for creative inspiration and artistic expression. And, you know, from Georgia O'Keeffe, you had, I think T.S. Eliot came here and wrote for a while.
D.H. Lawrence, I think. Yeah, there's a lot of artists and, you know, have come to New Mexico and
there's a reason, right?
And done some work here. Yeah.
So some of the best poems I've ever written were when we lived in Santa Fe and you were at work, and I would go to the La Fonda, to the lounge on Sundays because they had Cuban music and half price margaritas.
And a haunting,
you know. Yeah, I'd sit in the corner, I'd drink my little margarita, I'd do some writing, and I'd listen to Cuban music. And it was some of the best poetry I've ever written.
Sounds very relaxing.
It was. So yeah, I think New Mexico definitely has a place or a seat at that table, if you will.
100%.
So, Will, if somebody is wanting to write a book, let's say they're ready to publish it, what does that process look like? What should they know? How hard is it? What do they need to do? What should they be prepared for?
Like they have everything ready to go?
Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully they're in a good position. I mean, I feel like one thing I had to learn is just like, you know, the importance of editing and working with maybe like a professional, or even like I had a friend from the program who I worked with just for some editing help. Yeah, but once you have it and you feel like, you know, there's nothing more I can do, it's in, you know, it's ready to go. You know, there's a few different avenues, I think. One of them probably would be just checking out that website, submittable.com, because that has a lot of small presses, contests, book contests. It tells you sort of when the open reading periods are for different, you know, various places like that. And so you can kind of, you know, keep a little schedule going and see, you know, what's available now. You can search on there for like novel or, you know, manuscript, and stuff will come up. I mean, so you have to, you know, be aware that some things are like, you know, more authentic or than others. So it's worth checking out anything, their website, and seeing like what they do, what it entails. Have they, what other books have they published? You know, like if you find some link and it's like, they haven't published anything, it seems a little like small. I mean, the website doesn't look too good and hard to navigate, then, you know, that might not be the first on your list. You might not hear back from them, or that you would, and maybe they, I don't know, might not be the most legit place. But that's a good resource. I mean, there's lots of others. And, you know, depending on what route you want to go, again, I mean, you could look for an agent, literary agent. I think that's probably really helpful to get you. Most of those bigger presses, the ones in New York and stuff, won't just take your manuscript. You can't just like send them your manuscript.
Okay, here you go.
It probably won't even come back to you. It'll just be like destroyed, like on like site or whatever. So,
burn it.
Instantly.
They'll be like,
you have a giant incinerator and they just
it's like, that's it.
Yeah.
No, yeah. So if you really want to, if that's what you think, if that's what you want to do, and you don't have, you know, a lot of those connections, because some people have, you know, some connections through way, shape, or form, look at literary agent databases. There's various ones. You don't have to really buy any books for those anymore, because most of them you can just find yourself on the web, but it just takes time. I mean, actually looking for a literary agent probably takes as much time as like writing an actual book, because you have to do a lot of research on them, because you have to see what things have they represented, sort of what's their common interest. You know, would they be interested in the manuscript you have based on the things they've picked up in the past? Are they open for submission? Are they open for query letters or whatever? So that, I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into that, because some of them would be closed, or they're open at this period but not this period, and it's like, you know, the period they're not open happens to coincide with the time that you want to send your stuff out. So it's like, you know, you kind of have to keep track of all that stuff. And so, and a lot of times with writers like me, like ones who don't have, you know, a whole lot of publications and didn't go to a program like at Columbia or something, where, you know, you might get in touch with a literary agent just through the program itself. You know, it's a faster process sometimes to go through a small press in the hopes that, okay, well, I'm going to get published by this small press. They're not going to really be able to distribute it and like advertise it and do all the marketing that a bigger press would do. But the benefits, though, are, you know, it's a smaller community. Like they sort of care about your work, mm-hmm. and that's a good thing. And once it's published, it's published, you know, and it's, you know, maybe who knows who's going to pick it up or what's going to happen down the line. But I think, you know, it's good to just have your work out there in some ways, and it's satisfying. And, you know, in some ways it's like, well, you know, I've published my book, and that's sort of the goal, I guess, for me and others, I think. And, you know, and so there's nothing really wrong with that. But just even for small presses, those are big, you know, very competitive places a lot of the times. So, and you shouldn't be discouraged by getting rejected over and over again, because, you know, like I said, like a lot of pretty famous writers like Marlon James and other, like they've been rejected like 70 times, 75 plus times on their first manuscript. And now he's, you know, famous, world famous, translated in all these languages and stuff. You know, so it's a process. And there's another writer, I don't know, probably his name slips my mind, but I think it's Percival Everett. I don't know if you heard of him, but he's published like 20 books, I think. But the first 19 were all at small presses. And the last one happened to get nominated for some big prize, the 19th or something like that. My numbers might be off, but like a lot of books down the line. And so he got a six-figure deal for his 20th book because of this. You know, he was on the short list for this prize, but he's already published like all these other books. And I'm sure like the first couple like were probably published at even smaller and less well-known places than like the last few. So it's just, you know, it's a process. And if what your goal is to get your work out there and have, you know, hopefully other people read it, you know, small presses can do their part for that. And eventually, you know, if you're looking for fame and fortune or something, you know, you might be able to find that. That might help. That might come your way or something, but it might not. But, you know, it's just sort of that process. And I think, you know, if you're putting your time into it, then you might eventually get there.
Yeah. You really don't know where someone's writing is going to end up. And I think that's really cool. It's so funny you're talking about all of this. So I went to high school with the girl that literally wrote the book Adulting, Kelly Williams Brown, shout out to you. So it's pretty funny because it's like, you just don't, I mean, you never know like where that book or that manuscript or that idea is going to end up at the end of the day. And that's, I think, part of the journey and part of the ride. And I think that's really exciting too, because there's a lot of opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I've heard this, and I don't know if this is true. I'm assuming it is, but you know, you should never have to pay somebody to publish your book, correct?
Oh, we're on the same wavelength. So I was just about to say, there's a few things you should look out for. And even on legitimate websites or publications like Poets and Writers or something, you just have to do your research and look into the actual publisher, because a lot of times now they have something that's called the hybrid model of publishing. And what that means is, you pay us this amount because we're going to treat your book the way WW Norton or whatever, Penguin Random House or something would. We're going to give you a good, a good cover. We're going to do the editing or all this other stuff. Well, all those places do that, but they don't charge you for it, right? And a literary agent doesn't charge you up front to read your work or to comment on it, right? They take a cut once it's, you've secured some sort of deal, but they don't charge you right away. So you have to be careful about that because it depends. If you have money to burn and give to people just to publish your book, it's kind of in a way self-publishing probably,
right?
Which there's some places that self-publishing, seems like it works well for some people, and they get their name out there. But very, very few self-published authors go on to sort of become really, really well known and then published by one of those bigger places or even a small press. There's some, so it's not impossible to do that, but I think it's much harder because literary types tend to sort of maybe look down on that a little bit, because it's not like you went through the whole sort of process on your own and got published by some place that's really competitive or something. Because if you're willing to pay for it, they'll publish it. And the hybrid thing is more trying to sort of have it both ways, I guess, a little bit. We'll take your money up front, but we'll give you bigger royalties or something, or you'll get 100% of the royalties, whereas traditional publishing, they only give you 7% or I don't know, something like that. So it's you make this investment and then you're going to end up getting more back if you sell all these copies, right? But are they going to help you with the marketing? Are they going to arrange book tours for you? Or are they going to do all that stuff so that you can get your name out there? I mean,
it reminds me of maybe for more money. In those situations Amway or MLM, where you buy all the product up front and it's just sitting in your garage and you're okay, now I got to offload it. Everybody buy this stuff.
Right. Yeah. And then you can buy all these copies for a discounted price or something, but then you're the one going in your car, trying to pawn them off and go to sign up and make your own reading events and do different stuff. So it really depends. And I think, even within that hybrid scene, there's some that are better than others. So, if that's something that you'd be interested in, then look into it. And for me, I think I just really wanted to have my work be published the traditional way with an actual publisher of some kind. It didn't really matter if it was small or not. So that's really what I stuck to. But I, at one point with this most recent book last time around, I sent it off to this place without doing all that research that I was just recommending. And they were like, oh, this is great. We love it and everything. This was 5 years ago or so. And they're like, this is the way things work. You give us $4,000 and this is what we're going to do. And here's the contract. And I was like, well, it seems a little high. And they're like, oh, how about 3,000 or whatever.
You're
I'm not really negotiating. That seems a lot of money for this whole thing. And so I feel like in the end, it just ended up being a waste of everybody's time, because I shouldn't have sent it to this place. And they were trying to, every now and then, for a year or two, they kept sending me emails have you reconsidered and everything? It's I don't know. So you really just have to, like I said, just do your research, look into it. And if you're not willing to pay money up front, which you don't have to in traditional publishing, then don't do it.
Right.
So what's next for you? Are you working on anything currently? Are you taking a break? I know you've got a lot going on in your personal life with kids and toddlers and teaching and, is that a fair question?
Sure. No, it's no. I'm sort of taking a break right now. I have some ideas kind of tossed around. I'm thinking of a few things. So at least I have somewhere I think I might go. But actually when my son was... when he was a baby, before he could crawl, and I was watching him last summer or something, I did a good amount of writing for a couple months and tried to produce something that's sort of almost in book form, and it's pretty, pretty good shape now. So that was my last sort of project that I was working on, and now I'm really just editing and seeing what I can do with it, and I'll be sending it out to different places and see what they have to say. But I think that's sort of my mode at this point. Find a time, charge in, like a bear that hibernates, you hibernate for a while and then you wake up and then you're do all this stuff and then, time to hibernate. So right now I feel like I'm more in the hibernating mode, but I do have some stuff that I've written that I'm going to try to sort of keep working on and hopefully send out eventually.
So if somebody wants to check out your books, purchase your books, order them, where can they find them?
Yeah, well, these two, The Art of Fugue and Last Time Around, are on Amazon. You can look right on there if you'd like. I do have a very like minimalist website at this time, willclattenburg.com, I think. And it just has links to where you can get the books. You know, I think you can order The Last Time Around from directly from the publisher. I don't know. They might like ship it all the way from Australia or something. So it might be better to get it from Amazon. Depends on how much you want to, you know, payment and everything. I think for every book that purchased on Amazon, I think I get
$3. Nice.
So,
nice.
So yeah. So, you know.
Halfway to a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if 10 people get publish the book, you know, that's a nice $30. But you know, just the more it gets out there and stuff, like, the better. And I think it's on Goodreads too. So
There you go. Nice, nice.
So you've been in New Mexico for a little bit, East Coast man. So this is one of those questions at the end of our podcast that I usually drag out the rolling out of. But so
chop.
Red or green?
Ooh. I'm going to go red. Yeah.
And if you're going to go somewhere in town or order red chili from somewhere in maybe, I don't know, you could do Albuquerque or just New Mexico in general. Where do you go?
To get the actual chili?
Yeah. Or if you're going to go to like a restaurant.
Like prepared or whatever. Yeah.
Prepared. I probably just go to Smith's and that's on the side. like the Bueno or whatever. That's the one we use for like Thanksgiving, the turkey and everything. Yeah. And it's nice. Pretty good. It comes in either mild, medium, hot, very hot or whatever.
There you go.
Straight to the point, right?
There you go.
And accessible too.
Yeah. Bueno. Bueno's bueno. Yeah.
Bueno's bueno. No. Do you have a favorite like New Mexican restaurant or any place that you go if you're going to go out for chili?
I think, what is that one on 25 that, they have one in Santa Fe?
Oh, Tomasitas.
Yeah. I've gone there a few times and they have some spicy stuff there actually.
Oh yeah.
That's one of our favorites too.
I like the tamales though. Yeah.
Tamales are good.
Tamales are probably my favorite of all Mexican dishes or whatever. So
oh, yeah.
I always am on the lookout for like good ones. Cause when I was teaching in APS, like there was moms who would like be like, you want tamales or whatever?
And like, hell
yeah.
And they'd like give me like a bag or something. And there was someone at Ventana Ranch where my wife worked who used to like a cafeteria worker would make their own tamales. And those are like awesome tamales.
Oh, I bet.
There's a couple places in the South Valley that I think have pretty good tamales and stuff. But I've also been burned on my tamales too. I think these are going to be good. Like the Costco ones, it's hit or miss. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Depends on who's in the kitchen that day.
No, they're not always like the best. So I'm like, yeah, you know. And I'm kind of picky about them too, I guess, at this point. So just like my reading too. You know, if they don't like it, I'm not going to.
You're not going to finish the whole tamale?
I'm not going to do it. No, I might finish the whole tamale, but I might regret it later. Yeah. Though. Depending.
So I have to ask this question too, because this is just one of those things I, like, out of curiosity, I need to know. I know it's hot in here, so I'll be quick.
I feel like it's all heated up all of a sudden when we were talking about Tennessee.
I know. All of a sudden, it's so hot.
This could be like our podcast. We just like raise the temperature, make people uncomfortable, and
tell us about the chili.
Yeah.
So a chili interrogation room. So because you're from the East Coast originally, right? Philadelphia, I believe.
Yeah.
What was your first impression of New Mexico when you got here? I'm always curious to know.
Oh, yeah. Amanda could tell the story too. I think we flew in one time when we were living in New York, and I was just looking out the plane window as we were going into Albuquerque, and I was like, are there any trees here?
So brown.
It's very brown, very yellowish. And then there's this part where, you know, the plane gets lower and it kind of has this like, you know, Mars, like kind of otherworldly, like planetary aspect. Now I'm like, that's kind of cool. But now at the time I was like, what are we going into?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know. Probably I didn't notice like the river and like the tree, like the ribbon of trees kind of coming down the first time. And then when I stepped off, I was like, oh man. But my mom's family is from Southeast Colorado. So we spent a lot of time out in the West because pretty much every other summer we'd come out here. And I don't know if we spent too much time in New Mexico. That was like the one state in like the tri-corner or the four corners that we just didn't go to. But there's something about like the way it like smells out here that actually is very similar to like where my mom's family was from and stuff. And sort of even just like Denver, like I guess maybe it's like the elevation or like the mountains or like the way that the pine needles get crisped in the sun like all day or something. Yeah. It's just like it just made me think.
That's called fire. Yeah, no, I'm just kidding.
It's like the charred, yeah. There's less fire back then. Well, I mean, there's probably still some, but it just triggered that sort of happy sort of childhood memory and stuff. Like the Grand Canyon kind of has that smell too, I think. Like, kind of like, you know, just heat and everything like burning or whatever. But in, you know, in a kind of in a good way, though, not like, you know, yeah. out of control blaze or something.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Like a hearty s'more roasting on the fire.
You know, like it's the pine cones that have been sitting in the ground for a while and they kind of start exuding that sort of resin or whatever and that kind of thing. And like
sage and Palo Santo.
And all that stuff. So
when we lived in Oregon for a brief moment, I mean, you for first part of your life and us for together for a brief moment.
Right.
It rained and like I was expecting the rain to smell like the rain does here, but the rain here smells like 10,000 times more like wonderful.
It's more pronounced here.
Yeah, I think, I think it's something to do with like the
releases some kind of some odor or something that's really nice and that stuff. Yeah, but and so that whole thing, I think that that was at least an initial like, oh, I like kind of like that because you know it reminded me a little bit of like all those visits we used to make out here to my mom's family.
Yeah. So if there's somebody out there in Albuquerque who makes candles that can capture this smell, please let us know because I'll buy them.
I'll buy. We'll buy them.
I would buy them.
Okie dokie. Well, thank you so much, Will. I just said okie dokie.
Now I'm nerd alert.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Will. We appreciate your time. And we will link the website. And
in the meantime, go out and check out Last Time Around by Will Clattenburg and also The Art of Fugue Stories by Will Clattenburg and support local authors because you guys do that so well. We know that. So please take the time to go and check out his work.
All right. Talk to you on the next one.
What's Up ABQ is back. We have more interviews with lovers, creators, doers, and dreamers of ABQ and beyond. In the meantime, follow us on Instagram and send us a message if you or somebody you know is interested in an interview. And as always, we support ABQ locals free of charge. We love you, ABQ. It's good to be back, and we'll be telling you soon what's up, ABQ.